This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a man that, much like Johnny Depp, has a $30,000 a month wine habit. He is the captain.
Yeah, not only do I have a wine habit, but I have a scarf collection that I have to have a whole separate house for.
And lots of purple blazers, too.
It's good to be seen, and it's good to see you. Cheers, everybody.
Today we are drinking Creme Brulee by Southern Tier Brewing Company, garage grade 5 out of 5 bottle caps. You know, Captain, it sounds crazy, but this is like a fancy dessert in a glass.
You sound crazy.
Be very careful, my friend, because this beer is 10% ABV, but it tastes so good that you could easily and very quickly have too many or too much. And pitching in on this week's beer run is Elizabeth from Newport Beach, California. Elizabeth, you have no idea how jealous I am. Newport Beach sounds fantastic. It's about 30 degrees outside of this garage.
And it's gray.
Next, we have Laplada from Laplada, Maryland, who says, as soon as I'm alone in my office, I turn on your show. My office mates would think I'm a psycho if I listened while they were here. I think Laplada needs to work very hard, get a promotion, and get your own office very soon.
Fact of the matter is, we don't think you're a psycho.
True Crime Garage is not only your guilty pleasure, but it's your safe space as well. Next, we go to Germantown, Wisconsin, and say hi and a big thank you to Paul. Paul says, I really enjoyed the Facebook video of the captain showing us how he puts together the music for the show. Paul recommends that we cover Ed Edwards and the Sweetheart Murders. And you know, full disclosure here, Paul, we attempted to cover Ed Edwards. This would have been back in season 2, but it worked out that there was just way too much to talk about that we couldn't cram it all into an hour and 15 show. We weren't doing two-parters back then, but now we're doing a lot of them. So you might see Ed Edwards back on our calendar very soon. And next we make it to our favorite stop in Parts Unknown today, Population 1. And we say hi to David, who says, keep up the great work. Well, thank you, David. Next, a big, big thank you to Mike in New York. Mike says, buy a fine IPA. This round is on him.
Yes.
We may talk a little more about Mike one day. He sent me a lead a while back on a case that we covered. So, Mike, I know it looks like a dead end at the moment, but there is still some legs on this thing, and I'll have an update for everybody as soon as it's available and appropriate. So thank you, Mike, and cheers to you. Next, we have Bucky and Kayla from Toronto. You know, Captain, I have never been to Toronto. I've always wanted to go. And I know that they have Canadian football up there, but I have always thought that Toronto should have an NFL team. As a matter of fact, let's start a fundraising campaign and we could have a football franchise in Toronto, Captain.
In 20 years.
Captain, you could be like the crazy Jerry Jones of Canada and I would be more like the Al Davis.
I want to be the Gronkowski of Toronto.
Just win, baby. Just win. Let's stay in Canada and say hi and thank you to Amanda in Ontario. And last but certainly not least, a huge thank you to Acid Cherry, who says, I apologize for the atrocious PayPal name, but I set this up 12 years ago and I can't figure out how to change my name. So Acid Cherry, I should put you in contact with the captain, because not only is he the sound engineer here of the garage, but he is also head of the IT department. So thank you to all for pitching in for the beer for this week. And if you want to buy us around for next week's show, go to truecrimegarage.com and click on the donate button.
All right, let's get right into it.
That's enough of the business. Everybody gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer, and let's talk some true crime.
Meredith was our shining light in our lives. And now we are left with a hole in our hearts that will not heal. In our civilized society, we protect and nourish such heinous criminals as Mr. Hilton by providing 3 hot meals a day and a warm place to sleep under the protective, watchful eye of penal officials. Therefore, I feel that no punishment is too severe for Mr. Hilton. I only pray that he suffers immensely for his heinous acts, and that even his fellow inmates recognize his evil and malevolence for mankind and treat him with appropriate measures.
And how do you plead to the charge of the murder in Dawson County, Georgia, on the 4th day of January, 2008, with malice aforethought, causing the death of Meredith Hope Emerson?
Guilty, Your Honor.
It is therefore the judgment of this court, upon your plea of guilty to murder, that you are guilty of the crime charged. I'm informing you, Mr. Hilton, that I'm about to pronounce your sentence. And after I pronounce the sentence, you will not be permitted to withdraw your plea of guilty. Is there anything you would like to say?
No, Your Honor.
I sentence you to spend the remainder of your natural life in prison in the custody of the Georgia Department of Corrections. It is the intention of the court that you never receive parole.
Gary Michael Hilton was arrested for the disappearance abduction of Meredith Emerson after they found her ID, her purse, and bloodstained clothing in a dumpster. And they also found some other items of that in his van as well. Mm-hmm. And as you heard there, he was convicted after confessing to her murder. He led the law enforcement to her body. He did this so he could avoid the death penalty, is basically the situation here.
Yeah.
And he ends up getting life in a life sentence in the state of Georgia. And what you heard in that clip there is her father, who is, of course, upset of the situation, and rightfully so, calling for a little bit of what sounds like prison justice there, because he's never going to get to see his daughter again. And this jerk gets to go off to prison, and he's going to get 3 meals a day, and he's going to live in a warm cell, and right. He's going to live out the rest of his days. And this guy has lost his daughter to this animal. And because he confessed to it, he's not going to get the death penalty.
Right.
Now, what happens here is shortly after his sentence, we start seeing a situation where we have law enforcement agencies from other states meeting with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, who headed up the search for Meredith Emerson. They're meeting with them because they want to discuss this Hilton guy. They want to know, they have similar crimes in their states, and they want to know, is he responsible for these crimes? Because we're talking about a guy that you can't really nail down here, right? You can't really put a picture of where he was living when, because he was a bit of a drifter. He was somebody that would go and stay in parks and national forests for days or weeks at a time and drive around the country. You, for the last at least year or so of his life, you can't really pin him down. Now, this is actually something that he's done for most of his adult life. And when hearing interviews with him, he almost brags about having not worked a full-time job ever in his life.
Well, no, it's not kind of brags. He definitely brags. I mean, again, like we've said in the last episode, this guy thinks he is a genius.
Yes, he's labeled with like 120 IQ, I believe, which is of course is above average, but you know, he's definitely not genius level, but when you hear him speak, you know, he always thinks he's the smartest guy in the room, 100%.
Yeah, and so not only do we have similarities in other cases, we have evidence collected by law enforcement and the Meredith case that possibly could link him through DNA or whatever.
Yeah, these are items that were collected in his van and items that he was disposing of while he knew he was on the run for Meredith Emerson's case.
Right.
And while they were trying to collect him and pick him up, they collected evidence that he was disposing of. Now, one of those cases in particular is that of a woman named Cheryl Dunlap. And I'll take you real quickly through her case.
Yeah.
This takes us back to December 1st of 2007. 46-year-old Cheryl Dunlap misses church. And after church, she's actually so involved with the church that she is teaching Sunday school as well. She misses Sunday school, which both of these things are very out of character for Cheryl.
Yeah, at my church when I was a kid, Sunday school was during the service.
I think that's a smart way to do it so that the kids are not in church disrupting the adults. So what happens here is when she's not present at church and she misses the Sunday school, her neighbor decides to go, you know, walk over to Cheryl's place and check on Cheryl. This would be on Monday morning.
Because, yeah, it wouldn't be a huge red flag if she just missed the service. But the fact that she is the Sunday school teacher and she didn't call or no call, no show, it's a little odd.
Yeah, so she goes over to check on the home and check on Cheryl. And what she discovers there is that the dog, Cheryl's dog, is present. Now, Cheryl is a divorced woman. She lived alone.
Mm-hmm.
And her dog is there. However, Cheryl...
There's nothing wrong with that.
Cheryl's not there, and her vehicle's not there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And this kind of alerts the neighbor. So the neighbor decides to notify Cheryl's family that she's concerned, that she hasn't seen her all day at church on Sunday. And here again on Monday, Cheryl is nowhere to be seen. What happens here is she's then reported missing. And quickly after that, the police find her vehicle off of the highway. And of course, Cheryl's not to be found with the vehicle, but police notice that one of the tires on her vehicle has been slashed.
Yeah.
Cheryl has been missing now for about 4 days when the police obtained Cheryl's bank records. Her bank card has been used several times at ATM machines.
Mm-hmm.
Police obtain video footage from the ATMs, and this is immediately clear, right? The person using Cheryl's card, it's definitely not Cheryl, 100%. It's actually some pretty creepy images here.
It's very creepy. I will post this on Instagram for anybody that wants to check it out. It's really hard to... We kind of debated back and forth on this yesterday, you know, privately, right?
Our private
is, you know, it looks like a mask that is made out of tape.
Yeah.
But there is some speculation that maybe he took parts of a Mike Myers mask and created like a tape plus latex mask. I mean, either way, when you see the image, it's very, very creepy.
Yeah, what it looks like to me is, general description of this image is, you see it's very obviously a man's body, not a woman's body to me. It looks very mannish. And you see a man wearing a button-up shirt, but he's got every button buttoned up, you know, all the way from the collar down.
Yeah.
And
kind of a hipster look.
Yeah. And the man appears, as the captain said, to be wearing some kind of mask that could have been fashioned from tape, like maybe even just taping up his face, creating some kind of mask of his own. And he's wearing a dark hat and glasses. The thing here is, you know, we did debate about it a little bit, but there was a... Fred Rosen wrote a book about this called Trail of Death. And so he obviously looked into this case a lot more than we did. We've just been diving into this thing for the last week or so. But he says the way that he describes the mask is similar to that of like the old movie, The Invisible Man, you know, that because, you know, he would wrap himself up like a mummy almost so you could see him. So that is very much what it looks like to me as well. Now, the ATM one of these ATMs was actually accessed more than once using Cheryl's bank card.
Mm-hmm.
So the police decide that they are going to stake out this ATM. Unfortunately, that machine is never used again. And in fact, after that period, Cheryl's card is never used again.
Now, what's interesting to me is there any evidence that she went hiking?
No, I'm a little uncertain as to her disappearance. Because
we found the car.
Yeah.
And then we had, you know, so it's one of those things where it could Cheryl been picked up at a gas station or a hitchhiker? I mean,
the thought that I've heard put out there is, remember the slash in the tire?
Mm-hmm.
The thought was that maybe somebody had spotted her somewhere, decided that they wanted to abduct her. Mm-hmm. And she may have been out running errands or doing other things. And then they cut the tire and followed her until the tire would be deflated
right.
completely.
And then when she's stranded, I'm going to pull up and
offer assistance. Right. Yeah. And then you abduct her. So in mid-December 2007, this is in the Apalachicola National Forest. I apologize. I'm a little uncertain if it was hikers or persons that were actually searching for Cheryl or for clues in the area for the missing woman. Mm-hmm. But the story goes like this, that they were out in the area and they noticed a vulture circling above.
Oh, I think it was hunters.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was actually hunters or hikers. But I think they noticed the vulture and that's when they said, hey, we got to check this out.
Yeah, and using the vulture like some kind of bloodhound, they go to the area that the vulture's circling, mm-hmm. and there they find a human body underneath some debris, you know, leaves and things. Now, but here's the thing, though. The head and the hands are missing from the body.
Right.
And the body itself actually appears to have been burnt very badly. I mean, burned very badly.
Mm-hmm.
So to the point that the authorities are unable to identify this body.
Okay, so, I mean, just to clear this up real quick, we don't know if she was hiking for sure, but we do have this body that's found in a park,
mm-hmm.
right? It is decapitated, which is the same as Meredith's case.
Yep.
We have ATM usage with this wiry figure
mm-hmm.
Covered in tape on his face. And so these are the similarities. I'm trying to follow you on this.
So what they end up doing is they use, you know, of course, they've already seen the ATM footage by the time that they find this unidentified right. body. So they're already expecting foul play in Cheryl Dunlap's situation. Somebody has obtained her bank card and she's missing. You assume foul play here.
Right, right.
What they end up doing is they take Cheryl's toothbrush and they collect DNA so that they are able to match it to the unidentified body.
All right. So December 2007, we have Cheryl Dunlap's body. We now have it identified.
Mm-hmm.
And then fast forward, we have the Meredith Emerson case, and we have all these similarities popping up. And now we have Cheryl Dunlap's DNA, but we also have all this evidence that we collected from Gary Hilton's van,
mm-hmm.
the creepy, you know, white Astro van that he was driving around. So when they test that, surprise, surprise, well, we have Cheryl Dunlap's DNA in his van.
Yeah, we've got a match.
So, I mean, we got a smoking gun.
Mm-hmm.
This is open, shut case. Not so simple because they're going to take him to Florida and they're going to try him because I believe they want to try to get the death penalty in this case.
Well, they do. And the reason being is that you already know that he's locked up in Georgia for life. Okay. So now you're going to push the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to say, we're going to take you to Florida and we're going to put you on trial. I'm sure he probably tried to manipulate the situation like he did in Meredith Emerson's case.
That's because this guy thinks he's a freaking genius.
Right. So he probably said, you know, let's see if we can work out a deal and just get life in Florida as well. Right. They're not going to do that in Florida. They don't need to. He's locked up regardless.
Right.
It's time to put him on death row. And guess what? Good for everybody else. Whether you're for or against the death penalty, let's not argue about that because I think this situation is a unique situation. And
the only problem that I have with it is by going after the death penalty, then you give this guy ample amounts of time to get his name in the paper,
mm-hmm.
Constantly go back to retrial, you know, if you push the death penalty.
Plus, in Florida, I believe that if you are being tried and sentenced to death, that they pay for your defense,
right,
which is not cheap. It's millions of dollars.
Yeah, I have a problem with that. And I also have, and we've talked about this before, and we can't do it all the time, but we try to stay away from, you know, labeling the show, you know, by the killer's name, because we don't want to give them any, you know, press.
Right.
You know, we're not praising this guy. We're not praising this monster, you know.
So he goes to Florida, and we got to start this trial, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is when America is going to learn a lot about
America or America?
America, both.
Okay, both.
United we stand.
America and America.
Yeah. Sorry, you kind of threw me off here. But now we're going to start learning about Gary Hilton and who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason
being... I mean, other than that, he's a huge piece of shit.
Well, the reason being here is Florida's paying for his defense. And so they're going to make every effort to push the envelope to make sure that he does not receive the death penalty. So they're going to bring up things about his childhood and his life. And what we learned during this trial is that, you know, he didn't have the greatest of upbringings. His father left when he was young. Yeah. His mother remarried, and this guy didn't sound like a real great guy.
Story about that is interesting.
Yeah, so what happens here, and everybody wants to know, you know, what makes a serial killer? What makes a multiple murderer?
Mm-hmm.
And this gives us a little insight into that, right?
Well, some of it is probably not made. Right.
Well, there's an argument for, you know, nature versus nurture.
Right, right, right.
And I would argue that in a lot of cases, it's a combination of both.
Yeah, yeah.
In this situation, we have a young man. When he's very young, one of those Murphy beds, you know, the beds that fold up into a wall.
Mm-hmm. I've always wanted one.
Well, this Never is a good one. Reason not to get one. It collapsed and it had fallen on Gary Hilton when he was a boy. And this caused a significant head wound.
Really?
Yeah, he received over 200 stitches. It almost like
Jesus.
It almost like scalped him in a way. And so it's later going to be learned and determined.
How old was he? Do you know?
I think he was a young boy, probably 6 or 7.
Okay, so under 10.
Yeah. So it would be later determined by his defense team that during this accident of the Murphy bed scalping him, that he did receive some form of brain damage. He had damage to the frontal lobes, which a lot of people will argue that, you know, that can create these monsters in a way. So he has this injury from a childhood. But another weird thing happens, too. There's a little bit of abuse going on by the stepfather. He's not a great stepfather. There's even a story how he...
Is this physical or is it sexual?
I don't think it was sexual. I think it was mainly physical and probably more like verbal and emotional rather than physical as well. But when Gary is like 10 or 11, his stepfather is telling him that he should have a job. He should be out working.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that this guy is from another country, and he may not understand that
there's labor laws.
Yeah, in America we don't go off and
But back in Gary's day, he could have been a newspaper boy. I mean, that's what I rocked. Rocked the newspaper route, pretty young age.
When Gary was 13, he shot his stepfather.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But and then on trial, like when his mother is talking about this, it's crazy.
And this wasn't like he grazed his arm or something. He shot him in his body.
Yeah, he shot him in his lower stomach. And the count was, I don't know what happened. I think maybe it was one of the times where if there were, you know, physical abuse, he was probably getting beat, which was way more common back in, you know, Gary's childhood days. Just in general, around the whole country in America. But I wonder if it's a situation where it's like, I can't take this anymore. You're not going to hurt me anymore. I have a gun. And then the stepfather starts screaming at Gary. Shoot me. Just shoot me. So he does. Shoots him right in the lower stomach.
Well,
doesn't kill him.
No. No, and the strange thing here, too, is the stepfather chooses not to press charges against Gary. What ends up happening is...
Yeah, but I think that's either the mother protecting Gary or maybe the stepfather did have, you know, did actually care about him, just didn't know how to be a stand-up man or a stand-up parent.
Or maybe he was abusing him and felt
didn't want
that to come out, or felt guilty.
Yeah, or he did even something worse to him that would have been, you know, because back in the day, you could smack your kid around a little bit, and they weren't going to haul you to jail.
Right.
But who knows how bad it was.
Well, what ends up happening here is that even though charges are not pressed against him, he is taken away. He's diagnosed with some form of mental illness. And we will see this again later in Gary's life. But he spends roughly about a half of a year in receiving some form of treatment and not living with his parents. Now, when he is released from this, his mother will not let him move back into the house. He's still a minor at this time, obviously.
Well, I just love how the mom takes the stepfather's side.
What ends up happening is they take Gary in, and he lives with them until he's about 17, maybe 18, and then he enlists in the army. And he actually does see some active duty. He's stationed over in Germany, and he's with this unique unit, this unique platoon of 18 or 19 guys. I believe it was 19 guys. You know, you have one officer, and then you have all these other 18 you know, army guys, and basically they're called the Davy Crockett Platoon.
Yeah,
and
that was the platoon I was in.
Well, this
I was the captain of that platoon.
This is the strangest unit that I've ever heard of, because what their whole thing
that's what
is,
she said,
is that they have these basically it's a handheld nuclear weapon. And I've seen a picture of this. They call it a handheld, but if you look at a picture of this, it looks almost like the size of a human body, like a man size weapon. But you can hold these things, and much like a rocket launcher, they will fire a small nuclear weapon. Well, the issue here is, and I don't know how much of this that these army guys actually knew about, but their job was, if they were stationed in Germany, and if they saw the Russians approaching, they were told to fire. Like, fire these nuclear weapons, and we're going to create a nuclear war, I guess.
Great.
But the situation here is, these weapons only fire so far. So if you fire one of these weapons, it's a suicide mission, basically. You're going to die in the aftermath of firing this weapon.
Great. Let's dive into Gary Hilton more right after this.
The evidence keeps pouring in. At this point, the facts are undeniable. It's an open and shut case. Monopoly Go is the most fun you can have in a mobile game. Everyone is still talking about Monopoly Go, for a good reason. It is an absolute hit. Millions of people pass Go every day because this game is always bringing something new to the table. Like countless crazy tournaments you can join with your friends as partners or teams. Or timed events, offering bonuses like massive multipliers or rent frenzies to help you get huge rewards. And there's so many rewards to discover. Rare stickers you can trade with friends to complete albums. Delightful emojis to taunt people with when you raid their riches. Unique playing pieces and so much more. The verdict is in. With Monopoly Go, there's something new to discover every time you play. So don't miss out. Go download it now free on the App Store and Google Play.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, I highly recommend that you give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/garage today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/garage. This show is proudly sponsored by BetterHelp. Check out betterhelp.com/garage today.
The best part of spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless, when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. It's time to switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. Save a lot of money with Mint Mobile. Get their great mobile wireless service delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. That's premium service at a great price. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Everyone loves a good family mystery, especially one with as many twists and turns as June's Journey, a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story. It takes you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. You'll step into the role of June Parker and search for hidden clues to uncover the mystery of her sister's murder. Use your observation skills to quickly uncover key pieces of information that lead to chapters of mystery, danger, and romance. And customize your very own luxurious estate island. Think expansive gardens and beautiful buildings. Collect scraps of information to fill your photo album and learn more about each character. And you can chat and play with or against other players by joining a detective club. Can you crack the case? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Quick beer break. All right, and we're back. Cheers, everybody.
So where we left off, we have Gary Michael Hilton. And he is a confessed killer, and now he's down in Florida, and he's being tried for murder once again, and he's facing the death penalty this time.
Right.
We've learned that he's had a head injury when he was a child. We learned that he shot his stepfather and went off away for about 6 months for that, and he was unwelcome in his parents' home when he comes back.
Right.
Now he's served some time in the Army and the U.S. military. He's there for about 3 years. And he kind of he starts to lose it while he's there.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets an honorable discharge. The Army technically diagnoses him with schizophrenia.
Right. Well, I also think what's weird is, did he lose it in the Army, or did it just take him years to figure out he's already lost it?
Well, remember they identified some mental illness when he was a child, when he was 13 and shot his stepfather.
Right.
I think this is an ongoing thing. I think this is something that he's had, and maybe it manifests itself more the older that he's got. Maybe the stress of being in the Army and being stationed overseas. Yeah.
Schizophrenia normally is a late teens, early 20s type thing. But there is some early onset sides of schizophrenia.
Yeah. So I don't want to go through all of his history because we only have so much time here today. Mm-hmm. But basically his adult life after he gets honorable discharge from the U.S. military, it goes like this. He's in and out of marriages. He's married three times.
Right.
I think the lengthiest marriage that he's in was 2 years. Some of these other two marriages.
So depressing. I mean, how can this douche canoe trick three women?
Well, yeah, and two of the women are only married to him for less than a year.
Well, he didn't trick them for too long.
Yeah, but there you are with something there, Captain. He basically spends most of his adult life as a con man.
Well, think about this. I know, look, Valentine's Day is coming up, right? And, some people say it's National Singles Day. Well, if you're sitting out there, if you're listening to the Captain's voice on 105.69.
The Garage.
The Garage. Smooth jams in the garage. If you're listening to me right now and you're single, be be happy about that, because you're not dating some monster like Gary Michael Hilton. So be thankful for that.
You know, one of the things he was doing when he was conning these people, well, no, this is to tip you off on what some of these women, why the divorces came so abruptly and so quickly. He was running fake charities. He's getting people to donate money, and he's pocketing all of the money.
Yeah.
You know, the Gary Hilton Foundation, or, you know, I'm joking, but he was running fake charities on and off for most of his adult life. And when his wives would learn what he was doing, of course, they don't want to be anywhere around him. Plus, right. he's a terrible guy. I mean, you can, even if take away the murder, all right? If you listen, they have this thing on, you can find it on YouTube. It's called the Gary Hilton Background Interviews. This is where the Georgia Bureau of Investigation spent hours and hours with him. Mm-hmm. They're a little troubling to listen to because they are so lengthy, and he might only throw in tidbits of information in these cases from time to time. So you kind of, it's a bit of a snooze fest. But the thing is, this guy loves to talk. And he loves to tell you how smart he is and how intelligent he is. Mm. This guy is
sounds like somebody I know.
Well, he's like a toy, man. You wind him up and he just starts going. And he spends these background interviews are hours long, and the investigators speak so little during. They will ask him a question. He will spend 20 minutes answering this question, and he'll tell you everything about anything.
Mm-hmm.
So he's probably a horrible guy to be married to. Let alone the con aspect of his life.
Right.
What ends up happening here is, thankfully, he does receive the death penalty in Cheryl Dunlap's case. I'm thankful that Florida is also a fast track state. It's much like the state of Texas, where they actually still execute people there. Even, you know, a lot of states have the death penalty.
Yeah, their average
never use it.
Right. Their average stay on death row is, I believe, 12 years.
You're exactly right.
But also, I mean, when you have somebody that's, you know, again, this beautiful lady and beautiful mother and a friend to a bunch of people and Cheryl, to actually get closure for her family and friends, I think that's the main thing that's great that came out of this. You know, all the other stuff with Gary, I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's the closure that is really good.
Yeah, and one of the things, too, that's going to tie him in as well, you know, we talked about some of the similarities of the Dunlap case and the Meredith Emerson case. But don't forget here, Cheryl Dunlap, she was disposed of in a national forest.
Right.
So, you know, there's your similarity there. Meredith is abducted from one, and we have Dunlap, who is disposed of in one. Now, we also have investigators from the great state of North Carolina who are comparing notes with law enforcement officials in both Florida and Georgia, because we have a situation that happened here in November of 2007. Mm-hmm. We have a missing couple. This is John Bryant and his wife of more than 50 years, Irene. They're an elderly couple. John is 79 and Irene is 84. They are avid hikers. They both go missing in the Pequa National Forest. So here's what happens here. They go out hiking all the time. It's not a big deal for them to go on these day hikes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They don't come home from this. Their family lived in other states. Their children did.
Yeah, but they actually called family members and said, hey, we're going hiking and this is where we're going. They're always forthcoming with everybody just in case something would happen.
Yeah, and much like Cheryl Dunlap's situation, the mail starts to pile up at the Bryant's home, and a neighbor notices this and calls one of the family members.
Yeah.
Their son from Texas, he flies to North Carolina and he goes looking for his parents.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have much luck. I believe that he ends up finding their vehicle.
Go ahead. Back up a little bit. He does go to their house. He breaks into their house.
Yeah.
And then sees that they're breakfast from a couple weeks ago, because they've been missing for a couple weeks. Like we said, the family members live out of town, so by the time he gets there, some time has elapsed.
Yeah.
There's still their breakfast from, you know, days and days ago was still on the table. So that's definitely a sign of this, there's something major wrong. When they know where they went hiking, so they went and started searching. I think they did contact the police, but they're doing their own search and they found their parents' vehicle.
Yeah. And this was a place that they had hiked often, you know, so you wouldn't expect them to get lost or anything like that. Yeah. But, you know, as
But the major concern there is because they're
elderly.
Right. So maybe that there was a heart attack or something. But chances are if one of them had a heart attack, that the other one would contact the whole family. And what's the likelihood that both of them would have had a medical emergency?
Yeah. And the very big concern here, which goes along with that red flag that you were talking about, is they know that John has a heart condition. And for this, he relies on a certain type of heart medication.
Right.
And this is the type of medication that you are not able to go very long without. So this is of grave concern here. Investigators are trying to track the Bryants to see if they can find any hint at locating the elderly couple. So they tried tracking the couple's phone records. It was then learned that Irene had tried to use her cell phone on October 21st at 4 p.m. to call 911. But because of a lost signal, the call never reached the emergency call center.
Mm-hmm.
It was also learned that on the day after the attempted 911 call, the couple's ATM card was used to withdraw $300. This transaction was the first transaction made since the couple went missing, but the card had not been used since. On November 21st, 2007, 30 yards away from the Bryant's SUV that was already discovered,
right,
under a pile of leaves and debris, a body is found. This body is pretty badly decomposed, and at first there are no signs of foul play. But as is true in most counties, a found body is always treated as a homicide.
Right, right.
So after they process the scene, the body will be transported for identification and to determine the cause of death.
Yeah, and what they determined was that the cause of death was a blunt force trauma to the head.
Yes, and this does end up being the body of Irene Bryant. So now we have a situation where the missing couple, they've gone missing in the woods. And we have the wife has been found dead. We know that it's a homicide. The husband's still missing at this point, though.
Right.
They haven't found him. And remember, we talked about that the ATM card had been used. And again, we are going to see footage from that ATM machine. This is quite a bit different than the Cheryl Dunlap case, though. Because in the Cheryl Dunlap case, we get to see the criminal up close and personal. You know, mm-hmm. We talked about the tape mask. This situation, Captain, it appears that the video camera is one of those from like the drive-through of a bank, and the right. ATM is a lane or two over from the drive-through window that's recording this footage. And what you end up seeing here is you don't get to see the face of the person using the ATM card.
Right.
What you do see is you see that it's probably a man's body. But you basically see a yellow rain jacket.
Right.
Now, this later would be determined to be the rain jacket of John Bryant. And one thing that the officials figure out here is that the body size of the man in relationship to the ATM machine, you can get an idea of the size of the person using the card,
mm-hmm.
even though you can't see the face or see the actual body. But they determined that the body size and shape is different of that than John Bryant's. So immediately they know that this card is being used by somebody else, and we have a horrible situation here.
Yeah, and as law enforcement is gathering evidence, they don't have a suspect. You know, they're trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together, and they really just kind of sit on their hands because, well, that makes it sound bad on their part. But they don't really have any leads.
Right.
And then with this with the Meredith Emerson case, now we got a guy, and this seems very eerily similar to our case. So now law enforcement is going to come down and talk to him.
Yeah, so what happens is Meredith Emerson, that case happens. Okay, her body is found. He leads them to her body. He confesses to the crime. And it's shortly after that. It's in February of 2008. That John Bryant's body is found in the Nantahala National Forest, North Carolina. So again, like the captain said, all these similarities. But once this case goes out into the news and people start seeing his face, well, then it is
See Hilton's face.
They start realizing that Gary Hilton, there are eyewitnesses that place him at the Pisgah Forest before the abduction. you know, just days before the abduction. And this is a whole state away from where he lives, you know, so to put him there, he's also photographed there as well. What ends up happening is he goes to trial for this situation. He's going to originally plead not guilty, but he will later change his plea to guilty. He will admit to killing both John and Irene Bryant. What he ended up doing was he kidnapped John Bryant, and through force, intimidation, and violence, he used the ATM card and got the PIN code from John to get the $300. And after he had robbed John, he had no use for him anymore. And he shot him in the head with a .22 caliber gun.
Yeah, and then those background tapes that you were talking about, that's the thing. He mentions it multiple times. Hey, you're running low on money. Well, now you got to go murder somebody. And that's a, you know, we were talking about this earlier. That's such a far stretch. I mean, if you are a criminal, if you're a con man, then, you know, you're running low on money, you go rob somebody. Or you're running low on money, then you do, you know, one of your charity frauds. You know, you're a con man. But he's more of a murderer than he is a con man.
Well, let's investigate that real quick, because we have all these other cases. There's missing persons cases. There's other bodies out there that are similar in situation to crimes committed by Gary Hilton, mm-hmm. where we're talking about state parks and national forest involved here. Is he someone that's killed more than four people?
So right now we have John and Irene Bryant, we have Cheryl Dunlap, and we have Meredith Emerson. Those are the ones that he has confessed or was found guilty on.
Correct. So one thing we got to investigate here is he is of one of the rarest breeds of serial killers. Okay.
Well, is he?
Well, that's the question. Let me get through this here. He is one of only three people in United States history that waited until his 60s to start killing and became a serial killer. So that's a very rare breed of people. So mathematically, what that would tell us is it's probably not likely that he waited until his 60s to start killing.
Mm-hmm.
Mathematically, he's probably more like the rest of them and started killing before this timeline. So
yeah, possibly. But I think when you have multiple people diagnosing you with some form of schizophrenia, I would say that it's a good possibility that this statement is true and he is of the smaller percentage.
So let me go through this for a while, and it might take me a minute to get through it, but this has kept me up for the last three nights. I've been trying to figure out what is his situation. What is his MO? Is he a guy that kills to cover up robbery, or is he someone that just happens to rob and then kill? And I've struggled with this for days and nights now, and I've come to a conclusion. And I'm going to go back to what the captain was referring to here, Gary's own words in those background interviews. And I'm going to remind you of some of those things that he said in some of those background interviews. First off, let's go back to when he's talking about Meredith Emerson's case. He said, had I picked up the newspaper that morning instead of that afternoon, that girl, being Meredith, would still be alive. He says, when you take someone, you either kill them or you get caught. I am right. It's just math. You either kill them or you get caught. You know she saw the dog. Mm-hmm. You know she saw my van. All they have to do is put that out there and 10,000 people would be calling. Of course, I knew that I either kill them or I would get caught. But if I'm already caught, then there is no use in killing them. I didn't kill them for any satisfaction. It was distasteful. It was dreadful. Trust me, it was. Of course, I was able to do this because of my general rage for society. Of course, of course. But of course, you get that way with people after a while. When he's also talking about another person in his life who he thinks is a con man. This would be John Tabor, his former boss, right, that he does not like. He describes John Tabor as a con man, and he also describes him as a person that is committing crimes. And he states that he is not dangerous like me. I am a stud. I do crimes that studs would do.
Ugh, it's fucking weirdo.
All right, now, let's
say... You're not a stud, dude. You're a weirdo.
Yeah, but let's quickly analyze this. What he's saying here is, had he realized that his face was all over the news and all over the newspapers, he would not have killed Meredith, because it would have been easier to be charged with kidnapping and robbery than to be charged with murder after the fact, because in the eyes of the public, they already knew who did it. You know, they already knew who was involved here. That's why they're looking for him.
Right.
But because he didn't know they were looking for him, he killed her. Okay, so where am I going with this? What?
Yeah, I want to know.
Well, okay, so does he rob and then kill to cover it up? Or is that just part of the whole deal? Is it one deal to him?
It's just all one deal. I mean, when he says, hey, you're running low on money, so now you got to go kill somebody. I mean, that's what he said. He didn't say you got to go murder. He didn't say you got to go rob somebody.
Right.
He said you got to go kill somebody.
Right.
And, you know, and then he can say whatever he wants in the Meredith case. I mean, he killed three people before her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, look, I mean, if you know, are there parts of him that are just a con man? Yes. But he's a killer. I mean, he's a murderer. That's it.
Yeah. He says when he's talking about Meredith's case that he had $40 to his name and he only had a couple days worth of food. So what was he going to do? He knew he had to go kill somebody.
Right.
Well, like what you and I talked about though, when he's robbing these people, he's robbing for small amounts of money. You know, from the Bryants, he only took $300. What is $300 going to get you when you're a drifter? What is that going to buy you a week mm-hmm. out on the road? So what is your whole plan? This is a man with 120 IQ, and the only plan he can come up with is, you know what? I can rob someone and kill him and get $300 and get by for a week. But then what are you going to do? What are you going to do after that, Gary? You're going to have to go again next week and kill somebody, and then the following week. So
I think he was using that as a way to kind of justify what he was doing.
I think you're exactly right.
I was low on money, so then I had to kill somebody. Just like when he says, well, if I would have saw the paper, I would have let her go. No, you're not going to let anybody go, because in that moment, that even if he saw that paper, even though, see, hindsight, he's saying, oh, well, I would have let her go because, you know, then you'd just get me on kidnapping. Mm-hmm. I knew I was caught. No, because in that moment, even if he saw the paper, he'd say, well, I'm going to kill her. I'm going to decapitate her so they can't find out who it is. And I'm going to go on the run because I can outsmart these people. Mm-hmm. And every moment when he's faced with whether or not I can outsmart somebody or not, he thinks he can. And he can't. I mean, this guy is just, he's a loser. And the whole fact of the trial, when they keep bringing up the fact that, well, he is a above intelligence. No, he's not. He's a horrible person. He's a dumbass. You know,
Well, here's what I came up with, Captain. All right. Who is Gary Hilton? I think he's somebody that fancies himself a survivalist. Okay. He's somebody that he's constantly camping. He's hiking. He refers to even his hiking clothing as equipment. He doesn't refer to it as clothing. It's equipment to him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe this comes from being a child and having this bad stepfather move in, and he doesn't feel like he has a home. He becomes a survivalist then, and when he's not allowed back into his home after...
Yeah, but there's a bunch of people that like to hike and camping that are great people. So, go ahead.
I'm not saying that every hiker and camper is a serial killer. I'm trying to go through what I personally think of Gary Hilton mm-hmm. and his situation, okay? I think he fancies himself a survivalist. And part of that being a drifter, he does need money to survive. How has he figured out that he's going to get that? He's going to get that through means of robbery. And he, for whatever reason, believes that he needs to kill to cover it up. I had to go back and think of another serial killer, and his name is Joseph Francois. Now, what Joseph Francois did was he would invite drug addicts and sex workers into his home, and then he would kill them. But what would take place beforehand was he would purposely leave large amounts of money or valuables lying around, trying to entice them into stealing from him or mm-hmm. catching them in the act of stealing. When they wouldn't steal from him, he would walk into a room, point to the money, and go irate on them and accuse them of stealing, even though they weren't doing anything, and he would end up murdering these women. What I'm getting at here is, just like Francois, who needed something to kick off that emotion and to kick off that anger inside of him mm-hmm. that would erupt into murder, I think is the same thing that we have here with Gary Hilton. Gary Hilton, you're exactly right, Captain. He was a killer in every sense of the word. He is a serial killer. He was going to kill no matter what. It was the robbery. It was the need for the survivalist in him that kicked that off, that made him rationalize to himself that it needed to be done, that gave him the anger and the hostility that he needed to erupt into murdering these people.
Yeah, I think he did need some kind of accelerant to get it to the point. Start with the robbery. Therefore, now that they know who I am, so not to get caught, I will kill them. And that's what justifies my actions. But again, I think some of him is just complete bullshit. He's very horseshit. And I don't know if he was a survivalist or not, or nomad. For parts of his life, he wasn't. Towards the end, he was, you know, for a little bit. But then you would have to look at the mental health, mm-hmm. and what is happening with his mental health. And is that deteriorating? Is that what's becoming a monster? Again, I don't think you believe that he's in the small percentage of people that, you know, don't start killing until later in life. But he has confessed to some crimes, so why wouldn't he confess to more?
That's what I struggled with. And I thought about that for quite some time, because as much as he likes to talk, and we've seen him admit to 3 of these murders already, what is holding him back? But he only admitted to any of these murders after being pushed by evidence in law enforcement. I don't know if you had evidence on other cases, you might end up getting a confession from him. But mm-hmm. one thing that you were onto here, Captain, was the mental health situation. We talked about there being problems with his mental health. And Fred Rosen, who wrote that book about him, he points out that in 2007 is when Gary starts receiving Ritalin, and maybe high levels of Ritalin that he's supposed to be taking per doctor's orders. And according to Fred Rosen, this must have been what set him off, right? And that he started killing in 2007. And we saw that with the murders that we just talked about. Well, okay, so now we have our line in the sand, right? Did he start killing in his 60s, or did he start killing before that? Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of speculation out there regarding all kinds of other cases in other states, many of them involving national forest and state parks.
All right, so what are some of the cases that might be linked to Gary Hilton?
Well, we've come up with 7 of them, and these are names that we've collected through different websites that it's not just us speculating on this. This has already been suspected of as far as Gary Hilton's concerned. The first is Melissa Witt, who disappeared December 1st, 1994.
And what makes authorities feel like she's connected to Gary Hilton?
So this is a situation where she disappeared from Franklin County in Arkansas. And then more than a month later, her body was found in a rural area of Franklin County. Now, this is police officers' suspicion. Mm-hmm. They say that while the crimes are separated by years and states, there are similarities that make it worth investigating a possible connection.
Yeah, and I think it comes down to the fact that if you think Gary was killing before 2007, then this is definitely a case you want to look into.
Mm-hmm. One that you also want to look into is the death of Levi Frady. Now, Levi Frady was a young boy. He was 11 years old, and he was abducted while riding his bike. Now, the connection here is that his body was found the following day in the same area that police would later find Meredith Emerson's body, mm-hmm. as well as another person that is on our list. So while it breaks the MO of the victimology here, where we have an 11-year-old boy.
Well, and it also breaks the fact that we could assume that the 11-year-old boy is not carrying a debit card.
Yeah, there's nothing to rob from him. The last time he was seen, he was riding his bicycle, and he was being followed, or he was following a small dog. Now, we do mm-hmm. know Gary Hilton was always with a dog,
right.
And the thought was that maybe, you know, this boy didn't have a dog, so maybe somebody had used the dog to take the boy. I didn't see a ton of similarities here other than the area where they found the body. One thing that's troubling here is police have been very hesitant to release any information on this body and, uh-huh. and on Levi's case. He was shot to death, and we do know that Gary used a gun to kill John Bryant. However, they refused to give the caliber of gun in mm-hmm. this situation, where with the Bryant situation, it was a .22 caliber. Which, so that could help us a bit here.
Yeah, and the body being found in the same area as Meredith, to me, is, you know, definitely, you know, leaves some kind of, oh, well, you got to look into this. And to me, they need to look on the angle of Maybe not so much, you know, robbery, because that doesn't make a lot of sense. But what if, you know, we've heard a lot of times about Hilton getting in confrontations with other people about dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened? What, maybe there was some accident. Maybe the kid hit the dog, you know, with his bike or something, and that set Gary into a rage.
Yeah.
That's a possibility.
That's one possibility. The other thing that's not entirely outside of his victimology is that it's a person that he believes he could easily overpower.
Right.
You know,
right.
He's always attacking women or elderly people.
And one that kind of goes off the rails a little bit. I don't know. You know, I'm a big fan of the Charlie Project. And one of the people that they think maybe is connected with Hilton is Jason Knapp. Now, he went missing in 1998, April 12th, from Clemson, South Carolina. Now, it seems like he had a debit card and stuff on him, but there was $20 taken out of his account the day he went missing. But other than that, no more activity. Also, Jason was pretty big guy,
mm-hmm.
So it doesn't kind of fall into the whole Gary Hilton being all little and wiry.
Right.
It looks like Jason probably could handle his own. But again, if we do know that Gary Hilton has used a gun in the past, but there was no signs of struggle
right.
where Jason went missing. So something to look into, but I don't think there's a lot of connection there.
You're right. It's very loose. I think the one thing that they've talked about here as far as Gary's concerned is that the vehicle, the Jason Knapp's vehicle, was found in a state park. So it,
right.
you know, that's the connection there. How, you know, however loose that is. We also have on this list, we have Patrice Andreas. She disappeared from her hair salon in 2004. This is April 15th, 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she would have been in Georgia as well. So not a terrible distance for Gary Hilton. The strange thing here is this is definitely a robbery when you look into this case.
Right.
Whoever took her robbed the hair salon beforehand. She would end up being found in a similar area to that of Meredith Emerson and Levi Frady. So we have that connection plus the robbery. One thing too, in the background interviews that we've been discussing with Gary Hilton, is one thing that the Georgia Investigative Bureau was questioning him about was, did you ever go into hair salons? You know, I know it sounds like a strange place for a man to go, but did you ever go into any hair salons?
Right.
And he says when he was selling siding that he would go into hair salons on Saturdays when he thought that the building needed new siding. Mm-hmm. He would go in on Saturdays because the owner was typically there because it would be the busiest day of the week for the hair salon. And while he was there, he'd pass out business cards to the women waiting in line to get their haircut. Again, you know, the only real connection here is the robbery and where the body was dumped.
Yeah, big connection. I mean, a big connection between Meredith and Levi and Patrice is that they're all found in the same county. Next person on my list is Rosanna.
Yes, we have Rosanna Melania. Now, she was from Florida, but she disappeared December 7th, 2005 from Cherokee, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
She flew into town, and then while she's at the Ramada Inn, she calls a family member stating that she was going to go on a hiking trip, and she was going to go hiking on the Appalachian Trail, which is a big connection to Gary Hilton, obviously. She's later then seen, and this is believed to be the last time that she was seen. She was at a store, but she mm-hmm. was with an older man. This is an unidentified man, approximately about 60 years old, with gray hair at his temples. Now, the person that saw them did say that this man may have been wearing a hairpiece, because if you see the sketch of the person, mm-hmm. he clearly has hair that Gary Hilton did not have.
Right.
But again, it does look very much like a hairpiece. The man had said that he was a traveling preacher, which sounds similar to some of the cons that we've heard Gary Hilton pull in the past. She did suffer from mental illness. She was schizophrenic. Might not have been a great idea for her to be out, you know, states away on her own going hiking by herself. It just seems like a situation where she could be, you know, she probably looked to him as somebody that he could have taken, that he could have. She's out of her element. She's out of the area.
Yeah.
She doesn't know the state park.
Yeah. Well, with the Bryants and with Emerson, you know, those are victims that happen at a park. Mm-hmm. And then Cheryl Dunlop, we don't know for sure.
Right.
So since we don't know for sure with the, in the Dunlop case, that we can put Rosanna into that possibility. Again, we don't know if she ever made it to the park to go hiking. We don't, I don't believe there's any eyewitnesses of ever seeing Rosanna at a park.
Right. Other than her stating that she was going to go hiking.
But that does not, you know, disclude, you know, Hilton at all.
Right. And the last time she's seen is at that store with that older man, and they're purchasing a backpack and sleeping bags, things that look like you're going on a camping trip. Now, she's never seen again, and none of her items that she took with her on this personal vacation were ever recovered as well. So those items would be important to find. There is some strangeness in her case, though, because while she was there, she rented a storage unit, which seems like...
Which is a kind of a connection with Gary, because we know that Gary lived out of a storage unit for about 5 years or so.
Yeah, it's a connection to him, but it also seems like the strangest thing to do when you're on a vacation.
Yes.
I don't know that you need a storage unit for anything. I can't figure that out.
Unless it was, you know, a whole connection with Gary Hilton, and he's conning her into renting a storage space that he is going to use.
Mm-hmm.
Or who knows? I mean, the fact of the matter is that we do know that he was involved in the murders of four people. So we could just suspect that it's probably more than four. The big question for me is, was it, you know, is he one of the rare breeds of serial killer that wait till later in life to start killing? That's the big question. And I don't know, as much as Gary Hilton likes to talk, I don't know if he's ever going to answer that question for us.
Right. Next up, we have Michael Scott Lewis, who went missing November 21st, 2007. And this, he went missing in Florida. And this situation here, he went missing from the same county as Cheryl Dunlap. And this is what's weird here. How is he connected? Listen to this. First of all, we can put Gary Hilton in that area because we know that Cheryl Dunlap was abducted December 1st. Michael Scott Lewis was just abducted 10 or 11 days before that. So it's not crazy to think that he would have been in the area. Michael Scott Lewis's body is found in three different garbage bags in Tacoma State Park in Florida. This is December 6th, 2007. So we're seeing a situation where what he did forensically to some of these other victims, you know, with the decapitation or removing the hands,
right,
that we're seeing a similar situation where Scott, what Michael Scott was dismembered as well. And we can put Gary Hilton in the area. So that one's really interesting to me. And then the final one that we have is on December 6, 2007, an unidentified woman missing hands, feet, and head was found in five black plastic garbage bags along Stitcher Road in LaGrange, which is west of Macon near the Alabama line. There was an attempt made to burn these bags.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so we have a situation here where we don't, because she's unidentified, we don't know where she's from, where she went missing from.
Mm-hmm.
And we also don't know if she was robbed of an ATM card that would have been used, because we don't know who this body belongs to.
Right.
But again, we're seeing a situation where the dismemberment and the use of the garbage bags is similar to the Gary Hilton situation. Now, these last two that we talked about would still mean that he would have been in his 60s at the time that he started killing.
Yeah, I mean,
assuming that the woman had not been missing for very long.
Yeah, those two make a lot of sense. But again, it's the unidentified body. You would like to know where it's from. I mean, because the connection with Michael Scott and Dunlop being from the same county, that's, again, but how many people are in those counties? But
right.
But there is a lot of similarities there. And hopefully they can keep trying to link stuff and maybe even, you know, through DNA or whatever, they can add more charges to this guy and get closure for the other people.
Yeah.
The most interesting case that, when you're searching and scouring the information highway to try to figure out anything about Gary Hilton, I kept kind of coming up on Reddit post.
Okay.
Linking Gary Hilton to the Mara Murray case.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we know that Mara Murray went missing in 2004. So, again, this is not, the time frame is not too far off. The problem here is we don't, you know, from all accounts that we know that she wrecked her car and then was never seen after that. So, is that, that kind of is similar to the Cheryl Dunlop, where we don't know how she was taken. But we also, there is no body for Mara Murray, so we don't know if she's ever been found. The big problem here for me is the distance.
Yeah.
This happened in New Hampshire. Gary Hilton seems to be always around Florida, Georgia, the Carolinas.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at his arrest records. There is no arrest that I have found that is up north.
Mm-hmm.
And if he was doing anything sketchy, if you're up north and you have Florida license plates or Georgia license plates, normally that's kind of a red flag for cops to pull you over if you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing on record there. So it's just a name that kind of pops up a lot in that case. And so I just kind of, well, I found that interesting. I'm always following the Mara Murray case. So I was kind of hoping that there was some, you know, more of a connection to figure out, you know, some closure in that case, but I don't think it's connected here.
So we're obviously in 2017 now, but so some time has elapsed. Some years have elapsed since he's been convicted and sentenced to death in the state of Florida. So Gary Hilton is scheduled to die in the state of Florida in 2023 or 2024. Now, what I'm hoping here, Captain, is mm-hmm. we might see a Ted Bundy type situation where we have a guy that's in custody, he's scheduled to be executed,
right,
that doesn't mind confessing or talking. I wonder what we can learn from Gary Hilton as he gets closer to that date. Is he going to try to buy some time and release some names and give some details? Who knows? Maybe he is connected to some of these cases.
Well, I think the thing that you have to be suspect there is his con man nature.
Right.
And will he just be trying to make up stories to buy time? Or will he actually be involved in these murders?
So, of course, our final thoughts here is I think he might be connected to one or two or maybe more of these. Some of these connections are a bit loose, but some of them we don't have a lot of information. So the thing here is, though, Meredith Emerson, she fell victim to Gary Hilton, but she is a hero. And we talked about her fighting back every step, every inch of the way against Gary, and how her fighting back led to his being identified as the possible abductor and his arrest.
Yeah, I mean, Meredith, she was a badass chick,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, and the thing too here is it led to convictions in prior cases.
Yes.
And think about all the people it prevented Gary Hilton from attacking and killing in the future.
Well, yeah, because even, you know, the big question of did he just start killing later in life? Well, that doesn't matter, because if Meredith didn't do what she did, then he would have just kept going.
And thank God he's behind bars. It's one less bad guy to worry about.
Yeah, and I mean, my final thoughts on Gary Hilton is he's a wiry pile of horse shit. And I hope there is some prison justice there. So you want to remind them of the recommended reading?
Yes, this week we are recommending the Yosemite Murders. This has got quite the story to it here, Captain, because remember many months ago we recommended a book called I Know My First Name is Steven.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we had a case that took place where Steven Steiner was abducted, and he was held for like 7 or 8 years. It was one of the first cases of its time where he had escaped and came home and returned to his home many, many years after being abducted. Well, his older brother, Kerry Steiner, was part of that same family,
right,
would grow up to become a serial killer, killing in one of the national parks on the other side of the nation. So when we started talking about Gary Hilton, it reminded me of the Yosemite Murders. And this is by Dennis McDougall. And you can pick that up by going to our website, truecrimegarage.com. And you're going to go to the recommended page. We have Steven's book there. We have the Yosemite Murders book there. Until next time, be good, be kind, and don't litter. We'll be right back.
I was shocked, you know? They were always such a good team, so successful. But to do something like that, to exceed their budget?
While being over budget might not be a crime, it can disrupt workflows. With Monday.com, you and the team can be sure that you're all in sync. All the data, latest updates, files, and budgets are visible to everyone, so you won't miss a thing. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.